part by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, providing income to third world artisans by marketing their handcrafts and telling their stories in North America. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser and the director of the Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College in Champaign, Dave Leake, are joining forces on the program today to answer your questions about weather and astronomy. Ed and Dave did this last fall, and it was a great hit with listeners, so we thought we should do it again. So in just a moment or two, we are going to open the phone lines for your questions about astronomy and meteorology. But first, just a moment to say that listeners make programs like this one possible. Please support WILL Radio. Join the friends of WILL with a pledge of $40 or more. Call Pledge Central now with that pledge. The number, 217-244-9455. 244-WILL.
Hi, this is Peter Kimball, and I'd like to say just a few words about WILL, where I've been a volunteer and contributor for years. Why? Because of all that WILL offers us day in and day out, from in-depth news and features, both local and national, to its outstanding weather reporting, and local programming such as the Afternoon Magazine, where I've been privileged to assist on the Computers and You program. The continuing strength of WILL is due not only to the quality of its staff and programming, but also to the very necessary support of all of us who are listening and get so much in return.
Peter Kimball summed it up very nicely there. When friends get together, they're awesome. If you haven't yet made a contribution, please do it now. We're in the last hours of this membership drive, and at the end of the fiscal year, well, that end of the fiscal year is right around the corner, June 30th. All the money we need for the programming that you will hear beginning July 1st needs to be in the bank by June 30th. The number to call, 217-244-9455-244-WILL. And I'm going to turn things over to Ed and Dave, and I will be in Pledge Central, and I will be there waiting to take your pledge call at 217-244-9455.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580, the Information Advantage. Good afternoon. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser, and with me, the director of the Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College, David Leake.
Hi, Dave. Good afternoon, Ed.
And we're going to do our second version of this program, and we've kind of been toying around with the idea. I guess we're going to call ourselves the Sky Guys.
Sounds good to me.
Since we're talking about all things sky, weather, and astronomy, and of course, I'll try to get my stuff, the weather stuff, out of the way so you can see his stuff, the stars and beyond, the astronomy part. So if you have any questions about the sky, about stars, planets, comets, cumulonimbus clouds, thunderstorms, tornadoes, anything like that, hurricanes, we're going into hurricane season next week. The number to call is 217-333-9455, 333-WILL, or toll-free, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455, and we'll be glad to take your questions here on the Afternoon Magazine. And while we wait for our first call, I thought maybe Dave and I would just talk about a few things here. And I know that you've been busy with a lot of shows at the planetarium. It's the busy season for you out there, isn't it?
Yeah, spring is always busiest for us, given the number of field trips that we have. And those tail off maybe about the first, second week of June. But so we still have quite a few shows next week.
Well, I'm glad you're able to take the time to come join us here today. And one question that I know a lot of people have been wondering about is planets. There's been a little bit of controversy lately about Pluto. And where does it stand right now? Is Pluto a planet or is it no longer a planet or do they not know yet?
I can give you the official word right here. The official word is, I have no idea.
Well, that's great.
No, they're going to make a decision in September. There's a group of people called the International Astronomical Union, which, as the name implies, is truly an international group with people from each country being represented. And there's a committee there that's going to actually make this decision in September. And I'm glad I'm not the person making the decision because I think it's going to be a tough one.
And why is it going to be tough? Pluto is different than the other planets out there?
Well, Pluto was discovered in 1930, and we thought that was kind of the edge of the solar system. Then we started finding all these other icy things out there in this belt that we now call the Kuiper Belt, named for the guy who kind of first said it might be out there. So we're finding things, and we thought, well, there are all these little icy comets. But now we're finding some larger things. In fact, they found something that they lovingly call 2003 UB313. They need to get a shorter name for that.
I'd say so.
But and we're not really sure what it is. You know, it's a little larger than Pluto. So is it our 10th planet? Or because it's out there. It's over twice as far away from the sun as Pluto is. Or is it just one of these Kuiper Belt objects? Maybe Pluto is a Kuiper Belt object too, which like some type of something more similar to a comet. So we may go to 10 planets in September. We may go to 12 because we found some other things. We may drop down to 8. So I don't know what the odds are in Vegas for something like this, but
boy, that sounds interesting. Go to Vegas and try to pick out how many planets we'll have later this year.
Exactly. We have to change all of our planetarium shows.
So are all these other objects out there that might become planets, do they have an orbit similar to Pluto?
Yeah, of course, Pluto's orbit itself is really weird. It's really inclined to the rest of the orbits of the other planets, which kind of fit into like a pancake around the sun. And, sometimes Pluto's even closer to us, closer to the sun than Neptune is. And these other things that we found have even stranger orbits.
Well, that's stranger, so they don't even all go together.
Highly elliptical. One goes from 90 times the Earth-Sun distance all the way into 76 times the Earth-Sun distance. So that's quite elliptical.
So the last thing I'll just ask you here before we move on, what do you think is going to happen?
Ah, I knew you'd try to corner me on something like that. I'll say this. We had a gentleman here at a planetarium meeting. He's from Loyola University, and he came up with an interesting thing where you throw out the name planet. Now, obviously, we'll still use it. But in the science community, come up with lots of other different categories to call these things. Because we actually have two moons in the solar system that are larger than the planet Mercury. And, you know, should they have some sort of special distinction? You've got the asteroids in the asteroid belt. So he came up with this brand new system, which I won't go into now. I'm not sure I could, but it sounds pretty interesting. So I'm thinking instead of just saying yes or no, that they may come up with something completely different. And, of course, with us and the school kids, we'll still call them planets.
Well, that's very good. And for now, we're still on planet Earth here. And if you have a question about what you can see in the sky above planet Earth, give us a call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, that 1-800 number is toll-free anywhere you can hear us, at least in the U.S. I know we're streaming online at WILL.UIUC.edu, so it's not a toll-free call if you're listening in from Japan, and I know we have some listeners in Japan and Australia from time to time, but we'll be glad to take your call. The area code on the regular number is 217, and that's 333-9455. And we do have a listener on line one, so we're going to go to line one now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I've got a 5-year-old, and when she asks me how come the sky is blue, what do I tell her? I'll hang up and listen.
Actually, that's a question that that both of us are qualified to talk about, and because Dave teaches physics at Parkland College as well, so that all gets into scattering. I think that's the first thing I'll start out with is
sounds good.
The word scattering. There are different words to describe how light is bent, or I guess that's the best way to use it. And there's reflection, there's refraction. There are other things we could go into as well, but scattering. And each color has a different, what we call, wavelength of light. And the shorter wavelengths are around the blue and violet end, and the longer wavelengths are in the red and orange and yellow realm. And basically, it just has to do with the fact the shorter wavelengths are what you see. And you might... pass it on to Dave here to talk about why that is. It has to do with the scattering of the light from all the molecules of air and actually the dust particles, and that we could get into the colors of the sunset too because of that.
Yeah, well, the easy way to think of it is like billiard balls. It's not quite like that in the real world, but that's the easy way to do it if you see them kind of bouncing around off each other. Actually, little air molecules act like little antennas and absorb some light and then re-radiate it in maybe another direction, which is why you can look like in an opposite direction of the sun and still see a blue sky. And when the sun's setting and you get the sunlight going through the thicker part of the Earth's atmosphere, a lot of it gets scattered out, which is you take away the blue.
You're left with the orange and the reds and the yellows. And when we have more pollution, or if sometimes even when there are forest fires out west.
Mm-hmm. Volcanic eruptions.
Volcanic eruptions. Mm-hmm. We tend to have more brilliant colors with the sunset because there's more particles in the atmosphere that help to scatter away the blue. And but
good question.
So now that we've talked all about that, Dave, do you want to just summarize it? What do you tell a five-year-old?
Well, I would say that of all the different colors in the rainbow, and hopefully five-year-olds I bet have seen rainbows before, that the air loves to scatter the blue the best, and that's why it's blue.
So that's
Does
a,
that work?
That's a good, easy explanation. And then when she gets a little older, you can explain because of the wavelengths of the different colors.
Go.
But the shorter wavelength, blue there, the atmosphere likes to scatter. And kids do know rainbows, by the way. When I go out to speak to little ones, rainbows are always a hot topic.
We had a few of them lately, too.
Yeah, we have. Some brilliant ones, too. Had some perfect conditions. We could talk about rainbows later if we have time. But right now, we have another caller online, and I like to take the questions as they come in. So we're now going to go to line two. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Discuss objects, asteroids impacting the Earth. Do we just have the craters, or is there any substantial amount of asteroid material? And what about that comet or whatever it was that's supposed to have hit in Siberia about 1906?
Well, that would be a Dave question.
Yeah. Well, don't call Bruce Willis yet. And don't get all your information about comet and asteroid impacts from the theaters, because there's a lot of special effects going on there. In fact, I should say this on the air, but Armageddon, from a scientist standpoint, was one of the worst movies ever put out.
You can say that.
It was really bad. Anyway, there is always the chance of that. It is kind of a shooting gallery out there. But what I tell people is, despite the fact there's a lot of stuff flying around, the Earth is a very, very, very small target. And it's really nothing to really worry about. And right now there's, I think, at least two, maybe three groups that are out there that are trying to catalog all these things, even all the way down to a meter in size. And they're trying to cover a good part of the sky. So we'll at least have a little bit of warning if something comes a little bit close. As far as the Siberia, we think that was probably a comet there was an air burst and leveled a lot of trees up there. Again, we're watching for things now. That was kind of a big surprise. But we're watching for these things now. And could it happen? Yeah, but it's not anything I'm going to lose sleep over.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was going to thank you to the caller for calling in, and thank you for the answer. I was checking something here. We're getting something in from offline, too.
Oh, good.
But I just wanted to say A lot of the weather movies have a lot of bad science, so feel free to...
We could spend a whole afternoon
feel
on that, free couldn't we?
and people have to realize that the movies are entertainment. They
That's
are
true.
Fiction, and I enjoy seeing some of the movies that I know are not exactly accurate, scientifically speaking. Just about every movie that I've seen that has weather has had some problems.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the tornado movies just have a lot of inaccuracies, and I think we talked about that a little bit the last time
we did this show.
Mm-hmm. Probably one of the better ones I've seen of late is The Perfect Storm. That one was done well and had good special effects, but a lot of the weather movies are not too good. Anyway, we do have a question that came in off air, and right before I address that, I'll remind our listeners that if you have a question about the weather or astronomy, anything in the sky, give us a call. Our phone number is 333-9455, the toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. Dave Leake, the director of the planetarium at Parkland College, is here to answer the astronomy questions and some of the atmospheric physics questions. And I'm your WILL meteorologist, Ed Keyser, and I'll take some of the weather questions here, and we'll just have a little fun along the way. And the question I got off air is this. When you see a jet making its way across a clear blue sky and you follow it and follow it, when it disappears, how far away is it on the ground? In other words, how far in miles away can you see a jet? I think that would depend a little bit on the flight level of the jet.
Yeah.
And they also ask about thunderstorms, and I can answer the thunderstorm question easier than the jet question, although the problem with the jet is obviously it's much, much smaller. If you could track the jet, you could probably at times track it over 50 miles if the atmosphere was clear enough. As far as thunderstorms go, in a very clear atmosphere, you can see thunderheads well over 100 miles away, even with the curvature of the Earth. I remember going out on a job interview before I came here in Wichita, Kansas, and there were some big cumulonimbus clouds up north of where I was, and I was surprised to learn later that they were in Nebraska. So they were, in some cases, a couple hundred miles away. In this part of the country, you don't usually see thunderstorms 100 or 200 miles away because we have a lot more haze in the atmosphere, a lot of moisture coming up from the Gulf of Mexico. You get out into the high plains and you can see a lot farther.
Mm-hmm.
But thunderstorms do grow to over 10 miles in height, and you can see the tops of those thunderstorms well over 100 miles in a clear atmosphere. I have seen thunderheads here that were on the other side of Terre Haute, Indiana.
Really?
I remember one 4th of July a few years ago at night seeing some of the lightning lighting up the storms, and they were a little bit southeast of Terre Haute, Indiana.
And so, that has a lot to do with it, too, like seeing a jet, like at night, it's going to have lights on.
I don't know
if that would have anything to do with it. You can see it's all really angles. Because, as you said, you get the curvature of the Earth because you can see the International Space Station.
Exactly.
Much higher up, but it's also illuminated by the sun and reflecting. So a lot of things come into play.
So it's just not a simple equation. It has to do with how bright is it, what reflection of light's coming off of it, how clear is the atmosphere, and all of that. But anyway, that is a good question. And now I'm going to go back to the phone lines here. We have another caller on line one. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Good afternoon. Am I talking to Ed?
You're talking to Ed, and we have Dave here as well.
Oh, Ed and Dave, it's a great show. Ed, I've been a fan. This is Vince from Champaign. I think you folks are some of the greatest on our PBS here.
Well, thank you. We appreciate the compliment.
Of course, it doesn't hurt Ed came from Penn State.
Well, that doesn't hurt either.
At least it's a Big Ten school.
Yeah. Ed, possibly more for you than Dave, but Dave's a physicist. Being also associated with farming here in this area for years, we're getting quite concerned now. We know the subject is global warming, but I'm more interested in the science and the engineering, the engines behind it. It's pretty well documented now that by the British, that we've had a 1.5, maybe possibly 2 degrees Celsius rise in the Arctic. I'm not sure about the Antarctic. I assume it would be similar. We know we're melting. We know we're increasing the fresh water. What can we expect now for the next 50 years? Can we expect this violent weather to increase? Our rainstorms, our showers are getting violent. We're getting too much rain at one time. I talk to people about this, and all I get is, oh, these are just seasonal weather patterns. Go back 100 years. Go back, 150 years. We've been keeping record. And I say, no, how do you account for the melting?
Okay.
So, what are we really going to see? And is it seriously, in your opinion, going to affect Midwestern agriculture patterns?
Well, there's a lot of questions there, some of which are going to remain questions. I'll try to tackle some of this. I think that first off, it is well documented that the Earth is warming. That there's consensus throughout the scientific community on that. And I think there's also consensus, it's safe to say, that the polar areas are warming at a more rapid rate than other areas. So there is melting taking place. There's no doubt about that. And, of course, that's of great concern for a lot of reasons. That, of course, means a change in habitat for a lot of life on Earth. It also if the melting continues to increase in its rate, anybody that lives in a coastal area should be greatly concerned about that. From what I've read, if all the Greenland ice cap and glaciers melt, which that's not going to happen overnight, but if that were to happen, there'd be about a 22-foot increase in sea level. And a lot of places here in the U.S. don't even have an altitude of 22 feet. The Florida Keys, I think at its tallest point, except for a dump they have in one place, is only about 14 feet. I was talking to the Monroe County emergency manager from Florida a couple months ago and talking about hurricanes and the fact that some storm surges are much higher than that. And if a storm surge hit the Keys, and just the way to maximize the storm surge rate over there, all of the Keys would be underwater and there'd be no place to go. So there are a lot of concerns there. The scientific community is not at full consensus on the rate at which the Earth is warming or entirely on the causes. I think it's becoming clear that some of the cause is due to human effects, but the extent of that, there's still some debate on that. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times you get into politics on all sides there. A lot of times people have a conclusion they want ahead of time, so that clouds the science there. As far as agriculture in the Midwest, there's probably going to be some gradual changes. I think we've already seen that in the last 20 years, we have had mild winters as a rule. We've still had a few episodes of extreme cold, but just about all of the winters in the last 20 years, with the exception of a couple, have been above average temperature-wise. Snowfall has been lacking, and there's been a change in climate here in the last 20 years. And as far as rainfall, as you know, that's probably the one thing that that I've read that's changed more than anything else. There are a lot of types of weather that really haven't changed as much as some people perceive, such as tornadoes. We're not really getting larger numbers of violent tornadoes, and some things such as hurricanes seem to be cyclical. Of course, the last couple of years have been really bad as far as hurricanes hitting the U.S., but we've been in an active period since 1995, and there are some cycles of high activity and low activity with hurricanes. But as far as rainfall and extreme rainfall, there are more episodes of heavier rainfall than we used to have. So in some areas, it's probably going to benefit agriculture. In other areas, it may be a negative, but over time, we're going to see probably a gradual change. The last thing I'll just say, regardless of whether you think human interaction with or human, influences on the warming of the Earth's atmosphere due to polluting, whether that's causing a rapid increase in global warming, or if you're one that's in the camp that says this is more natural cycles And probably the truth is somewhere in the middle there. But I've always felt this way. Anything that we can do to cut down on pollution is a good thing for the air we breathe and the water we drink. So a lot of the pollution that causes the greenhouse gases that warm the environment also are not good for us, generally speaking, anyhow. And I'd like to see, I'm not going to get political here, but what I'd like to see is people working together to find solutions that help the environment without tanking the economy. Because it seems to me in the political area, it's either the economy or the environment. And I think that in the U.S., we've got enough smart people that maybe we could come together and work for solutions that benefit both. And that's about as far as I'll get with that. I'm not an expert on long-term climate, by the way, but my take on it is we should always try to do the best we can to keep the place clean and livable. And I don't know, do you have anything to add to that, or are you just going to let me hang out here?
I think you did a great job.
Well,
and hurricane season starting, isn't it?
Yeah, that soon? Hurricane season officially starts on Thursday, June 1st, and all forecasters that have made their seasonal forecast are pointing to the same thing, another highly active year, another above-average season for hurricanes. Well, we're at 1:30, and I think what we're going to do is maybe we have one listener on the line. I'll take that call. I'll take the call, and then we're going to go out to Pledge Central for a quick update on our fund drive here, as we are in the middle of our spring campaign. And if you want to make a pledge, by the way, the pledge number is 217-244-9455. If you want to call in on the air with a question, it's 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. It all ends in 9455, which
makes it easy.
Spells out WILL. But right now we're going to go to line two, and we'll take this question and then go to Pledge Central. Line two, welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Good afternoon. I wanted to just throw in one more comment on the jet airplane tracking thing previously, as you mentioned. Couple things. I suspect they were talking about following the contrail, which is visible a lot further than the airplane itself.
Right.
And as a pilot, I've noticed when you climb up, especially on summer days, the haze layer is usually kind of sharply bounded. So when you talk about the visibility is lower in haze in Illinois, that's true for things that are on the ground. But if you're looking at things at great elevation, probably three-quarters of the distance is through air where the visibility is 100 miles or 200 miles. And We actually tracked a 747. I work at the control tower, and we have radar. Tracked a 747 one day we saw flying over, and I timed it over 20 miles to see how many minutes it took to go that far, and then we saw how many minutes it took for it to disappear. And it was probably 160, 170 miles west of here before the contrail disappeared over the horizon.
Interesting.
Well, very interesting. And, of course, that would probably be at a flight level somewhere around 35,000 feet or so.
Yeah, he was at least that. I think he might have been at 410.
Okay. That's up there.
Yeah.
That's up there.
A long way up there. About as high as even a 7-4 can go.
Well, we appreciate your comments there and help clarify that. You know, I wasn't even thinking about the contrails, but, of course, you can see them a great distance, and I don't get to fly much. I wish I could, but he's correct about that. It's very interesting in the middle of summer. You get up just a little bit, and then you see that thick haze layer down near the ground. So if you're somehow able to get up a little bit, you can see a lot farther. Thank you very much for your call.
Have a good afternoon.
You too.
Thanks.
Well, we're going to take a break here and go to Pledge Central. And if you have any questions about the weather or astronomy, you can still call us. We have several minutes left at 333-9455 and 1-800-222-9455. But we'd like to know how things are going with the fund drive. And Martha Deal and Celeste Quinn are in Pledge Central.
That's right, Ed, and this is Celeste. I'm at the microphone, and Martha is waiting to take your telephone call. She's at one of the pledge phones, and again, that number, 217-244-9455. Our goal this week, to finish raising the funds needed to pay for programs like the Sky Guys, on the Afternoon Magazine. Our new fiscal year begins July 1st, so all the money that we need for next year's programming, the new fiscal year, has to be in the bank by June 30th. And as a listener-supported radio station, we are counting on you, our listeners, to help us do that. This year's goal for listener support, $900,000. And we're approaching that goal, but we still have a lot of work to do. This week, so far, we have raised $90,628. That's terrific. We have heard from 793 friends, 111 of them new friends. So if you haven't yet done it, today's the day. It's Friday. We're right here at the end of our end-of-year membership campaign. So it's very important that we hear from you. You can help by giving us a call at 217-244-9444. Five with a contribution. The basic membership is $40. You can also use your credit card and contribute online at willpledge.org. Willpledge.org. Let's get those phones ringing here this afternoon in Pledge Central, and we're going to go back now to Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine, and we'll check in with you once again before the hour is up to tell you about the progress that we're making here in Pledge Central.
Okay, before you go, yeah. Just one thing. You said we are up to 793 friends?
That is correct.
Well, we're only seven away from 800. Why don't we push for that?
Okay.
Let's get to 800 by the end of the show.
We've got five phones in here. Each one of them is manned or womaned. So we're ready to go. So we can go five calls. Boom, 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 boom. Is that five?
Yeah.
And then
something like that.
And then two more. So let's do that. Let's hit that 800 friend mark this hour. 244-9455. And to everyone who has called this week, thank you very much. Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Celeste, and we'll be back with you in about 10 minutes. You're listening to the Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser, along with Dave Leek, who's director of the planetarium, Starkle Planetarium at Parkland College.
And let's get some sky watchers to call in.
Some sky watchers,
yeah.
Sure. That would be good. And the number to call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And we apparently do have a caller on the toll-free line. So line four, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, it's a comment about you would speak of about the effects of the sun on our climate and weather. And I have this to further add. The author of a book called Solar Rain was here in Chicago and addressed the matter of these solar flares significantly that may burst forth from the corona and all the things that are around the sun and actually reach the Earth in literally fractions of moments of time with such great speed. And then we've seen about 10 years ago where they fried the circuitry of the satellites and also had its effect on the temperature of the water and other things. I was wondering if you know much about this sort of factor.
Well, I'll ask Dave about a little bit of that because I know you study solar flares somewhat, or you get a lot of questions at the planetarium.
Yeah, that's right.
And the coronal mass ejections, which sometimes lead to the northern lights too.
That's right.
I just love the name coronal mass ejection. That sounds horrible, doesn't it?
It does.
Actually, there's a lot of truth in that. There's still some question marks. And I know back in, I believe it was the 1600s, we didn't have very much solar activity at all, very few sunspots. And Europe went through a little ice age during that time. So there is a lot of evidence that the sun does affect our climate. What the caller's referring to are, these solar flares are these explosions, and you get a lot of these. A coronal mass ejection is just this burst of particles that flies away from the sun.
I heard they rate them according to some ABC right up to X factor. And not too long ago, there was a X factor burst that instead of coming towards the Earth, it went out to left field, so to speak. So we were spared that. But these things are going to be, you can bank on it, to use that term in their fundraising, that they're going to happen again, and what the effects may be on our communication systems and everything associated with that is going to be enormous.
Yeah, and one of the things you have to keep in mind, and Ed can maybe comment on this as far as tornadoes, if it looks like there's more tornadoes, it might just be more people have video cameras and our detection efforts are better. And with solar flares, we actually have a satellite up there now called SOHO. It's been up there for a little while now.
That's right.
And so it's in one of these orbits where it doesn't ever go behind the Earth from the sun's point of view. So we're keeping track of the sun really 24/7. And so now we're better able to detect these things. Once we see a solar flare, if one of these mass ejections is aimed at us, it won't be here. They don't travel at the speed of light, so it won't be here for about 3 days. And so we get a little bit of, and I hate to even use the word warning. That sounds kind of ominous, doesn't it? Our Earth's magnetism really protects us from these things. And it has been known if there's a magnetic storm, they've been known to, believe it blew out the power grid in Quebec once.
Right.
And I know the atmosphere, the ionosphere does a lot of crazy things. Wasn't there a story once that people in Minnesota couldn't pick up their own radio station, but they could hear the California Highway Patrol or something like that.
A lot of radio communication is affected by that. And, of course, there are times when some satellites, aren't they protected? They're turned away and shut down for a while. So that is a risk as we are in this satellite communications era.
Yeah, I believe they, for the one that the caller was talking about, the big Class X flare, they even put the cover on the Hubble telescope, I believe, for a little bit during that one.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling in. And now we're getting calls as we're getting down to the last few minutes of the program, so we'll move right along to Line 1. Line 1, good afternoon. Welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Good afternoon, Ed. I was late, so I apologize if I ask the question that someone else has asked before. But I hear you and I hear Mike Sola and others on the radio, you know, talk about the weather doing this and that. If you have a home computer, can you go to a website and see what you see?
Well, you can see a lot of what we use to make our forecast, but we don't go to one. We don't have a one-stop shop. We look at a lot of different things, and frankly, as a trained meteorologist, the thing that's changed in my career is I used to look for every little piece of data I could get just to make a forecast. Now there's so much out there, I have to choose what to look at each day. So I have to make choices on what I even look at to make the forecast. But a lot of it is out there on the web. There's a couple of places I go to that are password protected, but a lot of it's government sites with the computer model output. That's available to everyone. There's a lot of radar imagery out there, and you can look at a lot of that, but I don't go to, say, a site that says the weather today will be partly cloudy, and then I tell you that. I do make my own forecast. So
I see, because I know I'm visually impaired, so there is an all-weather radio you can get if you're like me or something like that.
No, the weather radio you can get, which, since you mentioned weather radio, it's good for everybody to have, a tone alert weather radio, especially with the same technology, specific area message encoding, so that you can get warnings when you're not paying attention to WILL or some other local media source, and especially at night when you're asleep. But those weather radios give you the National Weather Service forecast, some current conditions, and of course, the warnings. But as far as what we do here, we look at a variety of sources. We come up with our own forecast.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the question, and thanks for listening to AM 580. And now we're going to go on to Line 2, and we have a question there. Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well.
The question that I have, this is Mark and Rick from South Florida. We're traveling through Illinois, and we're kind of amateur storm chasers, and there's a lull in the weather right now. We're heading back west, and we need to know your best opinion on where we should go if we're looking for tornadic activity.
Well, when are you looking for tornadic activity? In the next day or so, or...?
We were looking, for any your best guess for the next day or maybe Sunday.
All right. Well, one thing I'm going to do, I have to look at a couple maps here. We're not doing really a lot of forecasting on this show. It's more general questions, but I can take a look. The next couple of days are not ideal for tornado chasing. I could tell you that. In fact, I just went to the Storm Prediction Center's site, and the only slight risk area for tomorrow is up in North Dakota and northern Minnesota. And then they have a little area where it says see text on the Outlook, which isn't very great for the Panhandle area of Texas and Oklahoma. But down that way, there's no real high odds tomorrow. And going into Sunday, there's a hot dome of air that's over the Central Plains, and that really caps it all off. So makes it to where you really are not – it's not the ideal situation for storm chasing. The day three outlook, which is the Sunday outlook, there is no area that's really highly favored. So if there are any storms that produce tornadoes in the next few days, they're probably going to be rather small and not lasting very long. So we go into next week, the greatest odds area for some severe weather would be from Kansas and Missouri northward up through Iowa and Minnesota, and perhaps parts of northern and western Illinois will share in that, as well as Wisconsin. But it's not the best weather pattern for chasing storms right now.
Well, thank you for your time, and we'll take in some sights while we're traveling through your beautiful country.
Well, enjoy the visit.
If there's no clouds, do a little stargazing.
We might do that, too. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, and we'll have to wrap this up in about a minute. Anything, Dave, that you really want to pass along to the audience on what you can see in the sky or upcoming shows at the planetarium?
Well, I'll just say we're closed this weekend, but we're starting our summer schedule next weekend, and it'll be the first weekend in June where we're just doing Friday nights and Thursday morning matinees. So, again, check our website, which is linked off Parkland.edu. Great stuff in the sky planet-wise. We're going to have Mercury, which will be the best it's been in a while in the evening sky for the entire month of June. It'll be in the west-northwest.
So near where the sun sets.
Yeah, fairly low. Mars is approaching Saturn, not in real life, of course, but in our sky. And on June 17th, they'll be in the west, and it'll be hard to tell them apart. And the brightest thing in the southeast is Jupiter. Can't miss it.
Yeah, Jupiter's usually the big can't-miss planet up there.
Mm-hmm.
That is if it's still a planet. That is if we have planets.
I think it'll probably stick around.
That's if we call them planets. Anybody just tuning in, we went through all that at the beginning
That's
of the
right.
show. So you'll have to catch the archive of this program once it gets up there in a couple days on WILL.UIUC.edu. Well, thank you very much, Dave. Time went fast. Appreciate your coming in during our spring pledge period as well. That's Dave Leake. He's director of the Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College. I'm Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at WILL. We call ourselves the Sky Guys. And right now, our regular host for Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn, is in the studio.
This is great fun. I think that we should do this on a regular basis. This is the second time the two of you have been on, the Sky Guys. I think it's great.
We need theme music, don't we? We got to have some kind of theme.
Theme music, theme logos, music. The whole thing.
Yeah, yeah,
so we could
package.
Give away coffee mugs next
there
time.
We go.
You know, is that what you do during the fun
That's
drive? Get
right.
a coffee mug?
We need a Sky Guys coffee mug, Sky Guys t-shirts, right? So next,
exactly.
You know, maybe the next, maybe in the fall again,
there
you
we
come
go.
Back. Maybe also you come back in the summertime, a little later in the summer, and we can talk again about the sky and about some summer weather conditions.
Heat lightning.
Heat
there
lightning.
You go. Meteor
there
showers.
You there you go. Plenty of topics for the Sky Guys. If you like the Sky Guys here on AM 580, we hope you will give us a call to this number, 217-244-9455, and make a pledge of financial support. Go, yay, Sky Guys, on the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn, the host of the Afternoon Magazine, and joining us this afternoon from Pledge Central now, Martha Deal. Martha, along with Harriet Williamson, produces Focus 580, and Martha also helps out on the Afternoon Magazine. Hi, Martha.
Hi, Celeste.
How about those Sky Guys?
Sky Guys. Not only do we inform you, how many of you out there have been listening? This is the time to call in and tell us how much you appreciate programs like this with the Sky Guys. Where else could you find this thing on radio except WILL? Pick up the phone and call 217-244-9455 and make a pledge in support of such continued programming.
Basic membership is $40. One of the things that we're about here on AM 580 is stimulating minds and inspiring lifelong learning. And we want to provide programming that respects your intelligence, the intelligence of our audience. And our callers are one smart group. Our listeners are very intelligent people. So there you have it. I think that is some evidence that we're we're right on target there with providing programming that respects your intelligence, and we hope you will support it with a pledge of financial support. The number to call, 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. And also mentioned our website, WILL.UIUC.edu, where you'll find the archive of this program, The Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine. And we have an opportunity there on that page for you to join us. Just click on Pledge at the top of the page. Or you can go to
willpledge.org.
Willpledge.org. However you want to do it, now's the time. This is the last weekday of our end-of-year membership drive. And by the end of the day today, we hope to be at $95,000. We're closing in on 91. Be the next to call. Help us make this goal, $95,000 by the end of the day today. 217-244-9455. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Let's find out now what happened on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the Board of Trade this afternoon in Chicago, futures in the wheat pit rallied 5 to 6 cents for the soft red winter wheat. The corn up anywhere between unchanged. The FART deferred September's being up 3 cents for the day. The beans were unchanged to down a penny and three quarters in the nearby. And the products finished the day mostly lower for the meal, mostly higher for the oil. Now let's check in Kansas City, where the hard red winter wheat finished the July contract, the harvest month, up 7 1/4 cents today, 509 3/4 the high. The low there at $4.99, settlement price at 506, they were up 7 1/4. September futures, a $5.16 3/4 cent high, the range down to 505 on the low side, settlement price at 514, up 8 1/4 on the day. From the soft red winter wheat pit in Chicago, July contract, the harvest month, 421 the